Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Adam Pranica.
I am also your host. My name is Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, for the second time in our show's history, we're actually looking at each other while we record.
Yeah, this will be like a distant and vague memory for most people, but this is the day that the huge distributed denial of service attack was taking down large swaths of the internet.
Yeah.
And we decided to get frisky and stream video of each other while we record this episode. Probably a bad idea.
There's no one out here on the internet right now, Ben. It's just a ghost town.
People kept refreshing Twitter for 20 minutes and they gave up.
Man, it really brought into crystal focus how often I'm on Twitter. Because when it was gone, I started to get cold.
Yeah.
Cold and tired. I feel like I was revenanted by the internet today.
I just felt like, jokes that should have gotten 7, 8 faves only got 1 or 2.
Yeah. Those are
tragic.
That's pre-podcast traction right there with the comedy there, Ben.
Where's my relief fund?
Well, part of the reason we're looking at each other during for this one is we want to get used to the idea because day by day, hour by hour, our plans of putting together live versions of our show are coming together. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
We don't want to get up on stage and have it be like an additional shock that we're looking at each other.
I think by the time this episode is out, we're going to be pretty close to actually being on tour. So people will know this by then, but like we haven't launched our official announces yet. But we're booking venues, and we took a bunch of meetings with people that have done this before, so they could tell us how to not be idiots about it. I'm getting really excited.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a way to put it.
Are you a little nerve?
No.
Un poquito nervioso?
No. I feel great about it. It's going to be fun. We're going to be in a room with people who love what we do. What could be better than that?
Are you as on edge as a generic security officer when a bunch of Klingons are tromping around on the ship?
I cannot wait to talk about that. Can we get into the episode?
Let's do it.
All right, it's season 4. Episode 7, Reunion.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
And this is the second time around for one John Frakes as a director. This time he decided to keep his character in the episode.
Yeah, he's not just there for one physical comedy bit. He's pretty heavily involved. I mean, definitely not a main or secondary character in this unfolding drama, but he's in the mix for sure. The Enterprise is doing something that could only lead to something not at all related, which is scanning radiation anomalies. I love all the like generic shit that they can be up to when shit pops off, Like I feel like when Picard says radiation anomalies, that's Star Trek: The Next Generation code for, oh damn, shit's about to get real.
It's what you tell your mom when she's knocking on your door when you're actually jerking it. Like, hold on, I'm scanning for anomalies.
So yeah, they're doing this, and a Klingon ship decloaks right in front of them, and it's not just any Klingon ship. This is a Vorcha class battle cruiser.
Looks like a tuning fork class Klingon ship to me.
I think this is the first time we've seen one of these, right?
Yeah, it looks pretty badass.
We've seen the USS Bounty type bird of prey.
Yeah,
but the battle cruiser is like a whole different. It's like on a different scale, right?
It looks like it's put together a little better than the Klingon ships we've seen before. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can get into this later, but the doors seem to slide more easily. There's less a din of like chains being dropped on the ground when you're on board. The fit and finish is nice.
Yeah, it's still the air filtration, not great.
Yeah, it seems like the difference between like an American rental car on the lower spectrum, like the compact variety, versus like the anniversary or honeymoon special that the guy at the desk gives you as rental cars go. Like, it's a good one. You're going to be happy to be seen on this ship.
It's a Hyundai Accent.
or similar.
Yeah. I see you sipping out of a piece of a gourd there, Adam. What's that?
Oh yeah, I am. I've decided to drink some mezcal today, and I'm drinking it out of a jicara. The problem that I didn't know until I got down here and we got on mic was that there's a little piece of dust floating in my mezcal, and you got to dust the jicara before you pour a beverage in here, man.
Oh, yeah, you got to dust that hick.
I like displaying my jicara. It lets people know that I'm up for whatever.
Yeah, that's our century's Horgon.
Yeah, right. So I got a little floater in it, and I haven't had a sip yet of the floater, but it's going down real smooth. I'm drinking a fine Del Maguey mezcal today.
Oh,
typically,
man.
it's a fine domestic, but I'm backing up with the domestic.
I don't have any podcast fluid of any kind, and you're just making me jealous.
Look, we can hold if you wanna go grab something.
Listen, I've got booze. I just don't have beer.
That's terrible. You should. Don't you have like the pink dot over there? Don't you have a bodega delivery service of some kind? Get some Amazon Now up in this.
I got laid off recently, Adam. Leave me alone.
Oh, jeez. Well, just trying to make you feel better.
Yeah.
I'm not you're trying to spend your money.
You're rubbing sand in it, buddy. So our friend, Ambassador Kalar, gets on the FaceTime. Turns out she's on the Vorcha. And she wants to talk to the captain. She says it's kind of urgent. So gives him a heads up that she's beaming aboard, and he's like, great, cool, Kalar. We love Kalar, right? Everybody loves Kalar.
Picard's like, hey, Worf, why don't you go say hey? Go to the transporter room and greet our guest.
Picard delegates this to him, and this is the not the first time that Worf has attempted to get out of doing some Klingon shit because he's embarrassed to be around other Klingons. I always love these scenes where, like, you know, Worf is, like, supposed to just be, like, down for whatever. He can roll with the punches, but if ever there's, like, some shit where he has to talk to a Klingon, he always, like, grabs the captain's elbow and takes him off in the corner and goes, like, can you please let me not talk to these Klingons? 'Cause embarrassing.
Yeah, these are the band kids that bully me, and I'm not really comfortable playing with them.
Yeah, you know, Picard is never one to, like, make a tricky job easier for his employees, right? Like, he never presses the red button.
He's the boss that doesn't solve for them.
No.
Lieutenant, you are a member of this crew, and you will not go into hiding whenever a Klingon vessel uncloaks.
Yeah, he wants them to step up and solve their own shit. Yeah. You know, he's like a pretty easygoing guy, as we will find out later in the episode. But, like, the one thing is, like, don't make a problem for me, you know?
Yeah.
That's the rule.
He's big on delegation.
Worf shows up in the transporter bay, and not just Kalar beams over, but Kalar and a little Klingon boy.
And he's got a little loaf.
Yeah,
he's got a little personal pan loaf on his head.
Yeah.
He looks like he's about to tip over at all times.
Look at the size of that boy's head.
Do you ever feel that way watching him walk around? He's a real, like, he's clearly a child. We know that, but
right.
He seems like a very small child. Like, how old do you think he is?
I think this actor is like a very, I don't think he's a little person, but I think he's a very small person, and I think he's smaller than his age.
Yeah.
That's
definitely the effect.
Yeah, but I also, like, definitely wonder when I see him walking around, like, did they make his loaf out of something super heavy so he's, like, having a tough time balancing, or...
I'm not kidding, it's like an orange on a toothpick.
Yeah, he's got a real self-aware walk to him. Like a child trying to act like he's walking.
Yeah.
You know? It's strange.
So, Worf being a daddy, because this is Kalar's kid, and she got knocked up when Worf was... when last she was on the ship. Kalar's here to bring tidings from the Klingon Empire that Kempek, the Chancellor, he's on death's door. He's not doing so great. And
you might remember him as Kempek of Fat Kempek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As in still fat. Too fat.
Too fat for that one lady.
Yeah.
What was her name? Kalest?
Oh, I don't know. But she was great.
Yeah, she was great, but she did have that no fatties policy, which was not cool, you know.
No.
Get woke, Kalest. Yeah, so Kempek has decided that Picard is going to be the arbiter of succession. Much like when Worf appointed Picard to be his chadich, Kempek has appointed Picard to be arbiter of succession, which means that when Kempek goes tits up, it's going to be Picard's job to pick the replacement Klingon.
When he goes swinging tits up?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kempek confides that he's being poisoned.
Yes.
And you can only assume that poison is the method of his murder, because I'm not sure if a knife is going to have much effect. He's wearing a ton of metals at all time. Like, he's just covered in leather.
Yeah, when Picard goes on board and, like, Kempek gives him the download on what's happening, like, the way the scene is played is that Kempek is in really bad shape. Like, he's sweaty and he looks weak and he's, like, hobbling around and, like, really, like, plops himself down in the chair. He looks like a man that should be in a sweatsuit, but he is not. He is in, like, most formal, you know, North Korean dictator level attire.
He clearly made an effort because he knew he was having company over. Good for him.
Yeah.
You should always look your best, even though you're by yourself. You know what I mean?
He baked a cake, man. yeah, and, like, this poisoning thing is, like, a real head fuck for every Klingon that is made aware of it. Like, there's a scene where Picard explains this poisoning shit to Worf, and Worf is, like, bowled over, you know?
That's not the way Klingons murder other Klingons, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Worf actually has, like, something pretty funny to say about this, like, that
his murder would have no honor.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, cool, so there's murders that are perfectly honorable, or somewhat honorable? Oh, well, this murder is half a gruesome crime, but half super honorable.
It's real weak sauce. Everyone seems to agree.
Yeah, Worf is like, we're not the fucking pre-Enlightenment French nobility here. Give me a break. There's kind of two parallel storylines. One is Kalar trying to
trying to get Worf to accept that Alexander is his son. And the parallel I'll draw on this is that Kalar is, like, culturally Jewish, but Worf, like, keeps kosher, you know? Like, he's like, I don't want to, you know, just showing up for the high holidays will not suffice. Like, if we're going to be mates, like, we got to do it right. And she's like, obviously, I love my heritage and whatnot, but, like, all of the little rituals, not so much for me. Like, too heavy of a lift given my fast moving lifestyle as an ambassador to the Klingon homeworld.
Yeah. And Kempek pre-departure is like the coworker who has a big project coming up and needs to unload it on someone else before he goes on vacation. Like,
yeah, fair enough.
Kempek's like, we got this big meeting coming up. I sort of have a ton of shit to do, but I can't do it. So it falls on you, JLP. Can you help a brother out while I have my out of office on?
Yeah.
Kempek is going to be unable to read or respond to your email because I am dead.
I'll be dead for the next indefinite number of weeks with limited access to email. If this is an emergency, you can send an email to jlp@federation.biz.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Now, you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
They have some back and forth, and eventually Picard is like, all right, fine, I'll be this arbiter. And the two Klingons that show up to vie for the chancellorship, which I guess is like a fight to the death type situation, right?
It seems that serious.
Yeah. So one of them is Gowron, the Klingon that makes Worf eyes even better than Worf.
Yeah.
And the other is Duras, the slimy dickweed that tried to have Picard killed and is behind the whole discommendation shit that happened several episodes ago.
Picard is so neutral about both of these cats that it seems like he doesn't even remember that Duras tried to murder him.
Yeah.
Like, it's never brought up.
They do a lot of kind of filling in for a viewer that maybe didn't see that episode, which they do a great job of. Like, there's a lot of exposition that they felt the need to get through, but it doesn't feel exposition-y the way it sometimes does. And so, like, you're totally caught up on the broad strokes of how Worf got discommendation. But yeah, they definitely omit the part where Picard went walking through the barrio and a couple of bad hombres tried to poke knives in him.
Yeah, but given the year that Picard has had, like, I sort of get why that's not top of mind for him as far as all the terrible shit that's happened to him lately.
I don't know. He recently had a Klingon knife inside him, so yeah. I feel like he might be like, ugh, I'm gonna avoid having that happen once again.
There's a couple, I mean, at this point in the episode, all of these storylines play out pretty much in parallel.
Yeah.
But I want to go back a little bit to Riker as director, because there are a few scenes in, especially in the remastered version, that are just more soft focus than the show typically gets. And I wanted to chat you up just a little bit about this. Like, the idea of a green director with a veteran DP, like, mm-hmm. that relationship and the trust between the two is super critical to preventing shit like this from happening. And it makes me wonder if Frakes is like, check the gate, and the DP is like, yeah, we're good, like, fine, let's move on. Like, if being a second time show director for him allowed the production to be a little looser than it would have been.
I don't know. Do you have specific shots that you didn't like, or?
There was a shot of Gowron when they were doing the Pataklan group in the conference room, where it was like just a regular single, just like a cowboy single, and it was like very out of focus. It wasn't even back focused or anything. It was just wrong.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder, like, what's up with that, Frakes?
I don't know. You know, this is something that I feel like HD has really fucked up for television production.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are shots in this show where, like, two characters will be on screen and one will be much closer to camera. And it's clear that they've stopped down a lot so that they're both, like, acceptably in focus, but not, you know.
But neither of them are sharp.
Neither of them is within the circle of confusion. And so, like...
That's my favorite Phil Collins song, by the way.
but I think in SD, that probably comes out to looking like two in-focus characters.
Yeah.
In a motion picture, they would maybe do like a split diopter or some kind of camera trick to put them both in focus, or just rack. But, you know, television is a very different pace of production, and they really have to, like, jam through stuff. And I think that, especially with extras, like, they probably don't have the dough or the time to go back and reshoot if something is a little bit kicked focus-wise.
Yeah.
And I notice it, like, once every, like, three or four episodes in this show that a shot is not crisp the way I'm sure it looked, but it was, like, crisp enough for standard definition broadcast television.
Yeah, and when they're looking at it on monitors... At the time, those are SD monitors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're watching it better than the crew was able to watch it.
Right.
Which is kind of an incredible thought.
Yeah. I mean, whoever's looking through the eyepiece on the Panavision or whatever is probably getting a nice crispy view. But that's, you know, the eyepiece is not the way the director intends you to view the final product, so...
One other thing I wanted to bring up along these same lines is that they shoot every Alexander scene super wide. Did you notice that?
Heed! Move!
I think they ADR'd everything that he said. He delivers a lot of dialogue with his head turned, too. So maybe they didn't have his dialogue written like they liked, or maybe the actor's delivery wasn't up to snuff, so they looped him later on. But
that's probably what it really is. I just interpreted that as they really wanted to show how different he is in size to Worf, because he, like, really, he doesn't even come up to Worf's waist. He is like a little kid.
Yeah, he's like toddler height.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He's a shorty.
Yeah.
So they convene all of the Klingons are, like, real eager to get this shit sorted out and get the party started. W/R/T, one of them killing the other one. They're just...
You're invited to the murder of my political rival.
Yeah, they went on a paperless post and they found a nice free template and sent it out.
Where? The conference room on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
When? Between 3 and 6 o'clock.
To JLP at federation.biz.
Yeah.
So part of the first part of the ceremony is everybody is apparently going to need to satisfy themselves that Kim Peck is in fact dead. So they gather on the battle cruiser and Kalar hands Picard a hentai dildo and they all take turns stabbing Kim Peck with it to make sure he doesn't moan or wake up or whatever.
Is he dead? I don't know. Let's stab him.
Yeah. And so, like, then they're arguing about, like, what happens next in the ceremony when the least exciting explosion in television history happens.
It felt like a CSI explosion. Like, everything is blocked toward this empty space.
Yeah.
In the room. And they immediately go super slow-mo as soon as the explosion happens.
Yeah.
It's very intense.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, there's a cut to Flash and then just a bunch of guys, like, doing forward somersaults through the air.
Yeah, yeah.
It always looks great when Klingons are going flying because they have all that hair and crap hanging off them, their bodies.
Leather.
Spikes on their toes.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had to sign some waivers, like if a toe spike goes through your sternum, you will hold harmless Paramount Pictures and, you know, the Big Rod Corporation.
DBA, Big Rod.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurses the disease. You'll have to go again.
Becomes clear pretty quickly that the explosive is on a Romulan design, and not only that, it was like a real small one, so it's kind of going to be hard to figure out who brought it on board the ship. And so they hold this meeting, and the whole time Worf has been kind of steering clear of the action because of his discommendation, and like anytime he's like gets caught on the view screen, somebody will yell some guttural insult at him that involves a lot of phlegm. And Picard is finally like, all right, you're going to come in to the ceremony and like break down this whole, like the results of our investigation about the explosive. And Worf is like, once again, like totally freaked out, really doesn't want to do it. And Picard is like, dude, you're the chief of security. Like if you want to like keep bowing out of this shit, you can maybe like not be an officer on my ship anymore. But if you want to be an officer, like you gotta like serve your function, whether or not it's uncomfortable from a cultural standpoint. And so
the version of this that you might recognize is like the pharmacist who doesn't want to sell birth control. Like,
right.
Worf, it's your job to escort people around the ship and do security type detail. Like, it doesn't matter what your personal feelings are about the specific job you have to do.
Yeah, that's a totally great way of thinking about this. So he goes into this meeting, and immediately Duras and Gowron are like flipping out and acting like it's this major insult to the process. And you know, Picard is great at like condescending the shit out of a Klingon. Like,
yeah.
He's like, that's really cute, but he's the head of security on this ship, and that's the function he's serving here. He's not here as a Klingon. He's here as an officer of the Federation. And Worf starts going through the results of their findings with this explosive, and explains that it was Romulan. And Duras is like, what the fuck? Like, we gotta get to the bottom of this. And so he storms out, and he goes to his room, where one of his lackeys is like checking out a laptop, and he's like, hey, guess what? Kalar is looking into your background.
I've got her search history up on this laptop.
Yeah, she is not in incognito mode. Yeah, and so Kalar has been like asking Worf why he got this commendation, like what that is all about, and she asks Picard at one point, and Picard's like, I really couldn't possibly say. And
he doesn't snitch.
No. Yeah. Snitches get stitches, and Picard's had plenty of those. He's trying to avoid stitches right now.
Yeah. The reason she's digging into it is because she is very interested in Worf being involved in this kid's life. And yeah. Worf at every turn up until now is like, no, don't tell him I'm his dad. Like,
yeah.
He's going to be super ashamed of me.
Yeah, there's all this.
And she doesn't quite get why that's such a big deal.
Yeah, he takes all that stuff super seriously, and she doesn't give a flying fuck about it. So when she wants to get some like domestic shit set up between them, and he's like, he loves her, like he wants to do it, but he's like, if I do this, then anybody that shares my belief system is going to project all of this shame onto you and onto the kid, and any kid the kid has eventually, like this shit sticks in the Klingon Empire. The shame of the father is the shame of the son. And so
Kalar and Alexander want to go out for oysters, and Worf just can't have it.
Right. It's like a story in my wife's family where her grandfather came home from like a work trip, and the grandmother had bought some bacon, and he found it in the fridge, and she like denied it by saying, no, I've been feeding it to the dog. And he's like, great, now I can't even kiss the dog. Like, that's the level of freak out that Worf is on here. So
I cannot clean up after the dog anymore.
Right, yeah. I just feel like all of the stuff between Worf and Kalar is very like telenovela. And then when Duras comes in to like confront her about the fact that she's checking into his past, it's like full fucking telenovela. Like,
yeah,
it's a lot of like turning away from the camera and you know, speaking truths that cannot be voiced and all this shit. And it's real tense. And it's one of those things where like we cut away to like a brief scene where the doctor explains to Riker that the explosive was in fact inside the body of one of Duras's men. And then we cut back to like Worf and Alexander coming home and Kalar is like piled up in a bloody heap on the floor. And there's definitely some evidence that she went through a glass table.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like they exchange some last words and then Worf has to let the dead know that a half human, half warrior is coming.
So his scream toward the heavens is a little half hearted.
Do you think that only half of her soul winds up in Stovacor?
Well, we know her teeth don't make it. Her teeth being the most human part of her.
Right. Yeah. She shows up and she's like, she looks like a old timer that doesn't have his dentures in.
This drove me crazy how long it took the medical officers to get to her quarters. Like it was like calling 911 in a bad part of town. Like, where are they? Like, Worf has all this time to hold her and like put his fingers on her wounds and stuff to try to stop the blood, but like,
yeah,
it's over and she's dead. And they finally arrive like what feels like forever later.
Yeah, shouldn't they just have like site to site transport from sick bay to wherever they want to be on the ship? Wouldn't that be nice?
I don't know. I mean, they sort of hint at this in the Remember Me episode when that old man disappears and then they decide to search for him by smell, basically. Like, it feels like the computer should know when someone dies almost immediately.
Right.
Just based on their position in the ship, their body temperature, and if that were to, like, disappear, that would be cause for a computer to, like, automatically sound some sort of alarm. I guess we aren't there yet.
Yeah, well, the sensors on the ship are not doing the same things that they normally do in this episode. And this scene ends with Worf trying to get Alexander to experience this death in a very Klingon way. And like we've already got the seeds of the relationship between Worf and Alexander being that Alexander is a little bit uneasy about all this Klingon business, and Worf is very keen on raising Alexander as nothing but Klingon.
Which is probably a pretty familiar tension to children of very devout religious orders.
Yeah.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
So they clear out with the body, I guess, and Worf...
Yeah, they wrap her in a sparkly body bag.
And Worf, like... goes over to his room and he takes off his sash, takes off his communicator badge, picks up his batleth.
He puts his badge on the table and his 9mm on his captain's desk.
Yeah, it's like and he takes out his stash gun, the one that he like.
The ankle holster,
the one that he would plant on a body if he needed to fabricate a justifiable homicide.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty clear he's going rogue right now.
Did you notice what was on the table that he left his communicator on?
Are you referring to Spiky Bird?
Yeah, the Spiky Bird makes an unexpected season 4 reappearance.
That was so much fun to me.
Yeah.
Like, Worf has got sort of a shrine of weaponry. He's got a batleth up there. He's got some fun knives. Mm-hmm. And then, like, in a place of prominence,
yeah,
on the mantle is Spiky Bird.
Oh,
super fun.
I just rewatched the clip, and his communicator badge actually doesn't stay on the table. He tosses it onto it, and it falls on the floor.
That's, like when you throw your keys on the nightstand, and they just slide behind.
I
so
just
aggravating.
I see Frakes seeing that happen and go, print that one. Print that take. That's the take.
That's good old single take Frakes right there for you.
Yeah. So they're like, man, we got to like talk to Worf about what just went down here. Where is he? And turns out not on the ship any longer. And
do you think it's weird that Worf is never a suspect? Like, he's just acted in a really strange way. His communicator's off. They can't find him. Kalar's dead.
Right. You would
he
think
just found out he was a dad.
The chief of security should be at the murder scene that just happened on the ship.
Yeah. It seems like for even a moment, he should be considered a suspect, right?
Yeah.
It's got a domestic violence situation written all over it.
Sure.
From an outsider's perspective.
Yeah.
I guess Alexander was there as a witness.
Yeah. But he's like a kid, you know? How firmly can you trust his account of the situation?
Not at all.
Anyways, he comes on board the ship that Duras is on, and there's a lot of grumbling among the Klingons, like, why is that Patak here? And Worf explains that Kalar was his mate, and they're like, oh, shit. And it's on, like somebody does that thing I love where they take a sword and they've got it in the scabbard and they hold the scabbard out to Duras and he just takes the sword.
Yeah.
And they have like a pretty intense sword fight here where Duras has like a saber. He has like a pirate sword almost.
Yeah.
And
a sawed-off sword kind of.
Yeah, and Worf has the Bat'leth, and like they're fighting. Worf gets Duras on the ground, and the Dustbuster Club shows up just in time. And you totally think that they're gonna like stun Worf or like grab him before he does the final blow, but nope. Like Worf just fucking killifies Duras.
This is another one of those scenes where I'm like alone watching it, and I'm like, surely they're not going to let him get away with this.
No,
he plunges it into his chest, and I'm like, oh!
It's so mental, right? Like, that, like, Data is there. Data can move very quickly and is much stronger than Worf, could easily have prevented this, and they just stand there and watch with their jaws on the floor as he does a murder.
Yeah.
It makes me realize that Worf can get away with just about anything.
They're kind of in international waters, right? Like you probably have a lot of legal leeway on another ship. And he wasn't wearing his badge. So he wasn't acting as an official representative of the Starfleet.
That is a fair but pretty tenuous point, I think. And
fair but incorrect.
It's pretty crazy that it kind of goes against things that have happened before where, you know, like with the ragtag group of raider aliens and Yuta, the genetically engineered killer woman. Like, when that guy dies in the beginning of that episode, they're also like, no big deal. Nobody cares about that guy. And the Enterprise is like, no, we're getting to the bottom of this. We are going to find out who killed this guy. And that's like a whole part of that storyline. In this, they're like, oh, one of our guys went over to your ship and killed one of your guys and you don't care that much? Cool. We don't care that much either.
Yeah. Real weird.
Yeah.
This must have been a fun scene for Frakes to direct too. Like this is a real fight scene with a lot of compound moves and not a lot of cuts.
No, yeah.
There's a lot for him to do here.
Good swashbuckling. It's fun to see. I think it's the first time we've really seen Worf do like super artsy fartsy martial art style Bat'leth moves where he's like swinging it around and showing his kata. And it's fun to see Bat'leth against not another Bat'leth, but a different weapon.
Yeah.
Like as much as I was hoping he would pick up that spiky bird, it was fun to see this fight scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe someday we'll see Bat'leth versus Spiky Bird.
If they ever go back to Code of Honor Planet, what are the chances?
God. You know how they sold off all of the props on this show? I wonder how much Spiky Bird went for.
Oh, man. That is in, like,
Someone out there owns Spiky Bird.
David Duke's man cave has Spiky Bird in it. It's like, man, I don't like Star Trek that much, what with all the multiculturalism, but that one episode I really liked. Something about it.
The watch count on that episode is like at 80.
Yeah.
He's got it on because it calms me. It soothes me before bed.
He's got the whole first season on VHS, and that one tape is just totally worn out because it's been rewound and replayed so many times.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are Borg.
The little final moment after Picard kind of scolds Worf and says, like, you know, the demands of your society should not come before your responsibilities on this ship, and if they you know, if you need them to, like, you need to, like, not be on this crew. And
yeah, we got a lot of people from a lot of planets on this ship that don't seem to have a problem giving out birth control.
Yeah,
Worf, maybe you should come correct and just decide to be a 100% Federation affiliated officer from now on. What do you say?
Yeah, and Worf is into that. You know, but he is going to get a little note. He's going to get, like, the Federation equivalent of a write up.
Look, Worf, we're going to stick you on an improvement plan. We're going to have weekly meetings to talk about how you're progressing. I want to make it clear you're not being punished. You just see some areas for improvement, okay? Does this sound familiar, Ben?
If we didn't want you here, we wouldn't be doing this.
You're so right. Oh, that's the line.
Yeah. Gross.
Yeah.
The little button on the episode is Worf having a real intense scene with little Alexander, where he comes clean to Alexander about a lot of things, and probably the most intense is Alexander asks Worf if he's his father. And he says, "I am your father." And Alexander goes, "No! That's not true! That's impossible!"
The best part for me was getting to watch you do that. Worf has a couple of follow-up questions for Alexander. He's like, "So, you're going to go live with my parents in Russia. Just want to see how you like borscht. Is that a yes or a no?"
Yeah. What's your feelings with regard to pierogies?
W/R/T pierogi.
I just want to take your temperature on oppression.
Yeah, that's the button. The button, like, it's oddly... it's a weird mix of hopeful in the Worf cops to be in the dad. Mm-hmm. Alexander seems satisfied by this. Worf also breaks the news that, like, yeah, I'm your dad, but you can't live with me. See ya.
Yeah.
Like, how are we supposed to feel about this?
I don't know, man. I think that's a... unfortunately, like, I don't think we're supposed to think of Worf as black, but unfortunately a stereotype that I don't think that 1990s TV shows were afraid to reinforce, and
this one and specifically.
I did feel a type of way about that. Like, it's like, it's a pretty, like, advanced kind of racism, where most of the time the racism in this show seems more like stepping on a rake, and this is like black dude dies at the beginning. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I was sad that Kalar got killed.
Yeah, man,
I really liked her.
She's a good character.
I don't feel like to serve the story in the episode, they even needed to do that. Like, I guess if you're forcing Worf to cop to being the dad, that is a way to do it.
Right.
But I think she gives so much more value to the show in other ways that to me didn't seem worth the sacrifice of losing her as a recurring character, because she was just a great foil for Worf.
Yeah.
She's super fun. Like, her... I don't know. I'm truly gonna miss her in a lot of ways. I think she's just fun to have around, and to know that's it. kind
as
of
a performer, she is definitely the equal of anybody that they put her on screen with, and really like takes up her part of the frame, you know. For all of the like extras that we get on this show, that's not always the case, you know.
Yeah. She does a thing though in this episode that I don't recall from her first appearance, and Ben, you might just want to take off your earphones for this, because like I think I'm about to ruin her for a lot of people. But she has that voice effect where she is very self-aware that what she's saying is needling the person she's talking to, and it's very Ann Coultery to me. I closed my eyes in the middle of this episode to see if it was true. Like, oh man, she sort of sounds like Ann Coulter to me. And then I closed my eyes and I'm like, oh God, it's not going away. Like, it really sounds like her.
No! So, yeah. That's not true! That's impossible!
Yeah. Sorry, Ben. Did you like this episode?
This episode of Bill Maher?
Yeah.
I did. I think this is a fun episode. Always fun to dip your toe into the Klingoniverse. And Gowron is a fun character. As good of a villain as Duras is, like, him being out of the way makes way for the rest of the Duras family to come into play, which...
The rest of House Duras.
Yeah, which is exciting.
Yeah.
And Gowron has those crazy eyes, which I love looking at.
Just get lost in those crazy eyes, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some terrifying bedroom eyes, aren't they?
They really are. Yeah, I would not want to be... I would want to keep the lights on for that one.
Yeah. Or close your own eyes.
Right. Your tack is to be swept away and just kind of ignore it, but I want to make sure he's not up to anything.
Yeah.
And
that's responsible, especially if you don't know someone very well.
Yeah. You like this one?
I do, in spite of not being completely satisfied at its conclusion. Like, this was another can kicker episode. Like, we're kicking this Klingon can down the road on the storyline. So, we resolve and end some characters. The story itself moves on. Yeah, I liked it.
Cool.
Good ep.
Why don't we check the subspace radio? What do you say about that?
Yeah, I had taken off my communicator and set it aside, so I wasn't aware that we were getting one of those messages. So let's go ahead and do that.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first priority one message is a personal message, Ben, and it is to us.
What?
Much like the Borgs when they hailed Picard directly.
Yeah.
This one is going straight to us.
Is that allowed?
Begins like this. Adam and Ben, I love the show. I even traded a few scarves for a West Hot t-shirt and sold my natural Jaeger to buy these two P1 messages. Whoa. Knowing what we know about the Jaeger market right now, I hope he made $1,000 off of that deal.
Yeah.
All right. He continues, but please stop wasting vetoes. To give each episode the loving reviews they all deserve and still retain the riveting veto drama. And then this message is cut off. It cuts off in the middle.
Something wrong with the subspace transponder. Our second P1 message is also from Michael Durst.
There he is.
And now the conclusion. Oh, I like that. Maybe the vetoing hosts provide 10 random audio clips, which the non-vetoing host must incorporate into a solo-hosted review of the vetoed episode. For even more suspense, maybe the host with the most impressions/inside jokes last season gets an extra veto in the new season. Keep up the great work and thanks for the fun. So the second part of the message almost sounds like he's giving us ideas for how to continue the veto.
Yeah, and also, like, here's my idea, guys. I'd like to give you a ton more work to do. That's not nice.
Well, he did pay us to do something, so.
Yeah, that's true.
That takes a little bit of the sting off of it.
As we mention constantly, we don't pre-plan how we deploy the vetoes. It just so happens that we've shot them at each other every time.
I think the last round of veto counter veto really pissed a couple of people off, though.
Yeah.
Because I think both because Remember Me is kind of a beloved episode, and also it's now four times in a row, and I think people are starting to suspect that we're not being entirely honest about the vetoes, but we are.
I don't know what would give them that idea, and if this were pre-planned, I would have no problem telling everyone that we pre-planned them, but that's not the case.
Yeah. So thank you for the delicious money, Michael. But unfortunately, I think your suggestion is too confusing, and also we're too committed to our ridiculous way of doing things around here.
I like how Michael's first idea is to kick one of us off the show.
Well, if you would like to send us a Jumbotron message, or anybody else a Jumbotron message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It is $100 for a personal message, or $200 for a commercial message.
Or $200 for two personal messages.
Yeah, as this guy discovered. that's like the funniest part of this.
Yeah, no.
How much it cost.
I think there was a way to write this message in one message.
Yeah, I think he hoisted himself on his own petard. But yeah, it is a great way to support the show, and we really appreciate it.
Hey, Ben.
Adam, what's that?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. This is another one where I'm going to give you some time code. So if you go to time code 24 minutes and 23 seconds, there's a scene where Gowron and Duras are about to go to fisticuffs in the Patachlan group, and it's a scene where Gowron reaches behind him and punches one of the security guys, and then goes for Duras, and the other security guy gets in between them. But as he gets in between them, it is clear that they did not explain to this extra how a phaser is held or triggered, because his finger is nowhere near the trigger button on the phaser. And I just thought it was like, you know, it'd be like if he was holding a gun by the barrel, you know, like, not so fast, bub. And they're like, do you even know what you're holding, dude?
That guy has got some real low rent Channing Tatum vibes, too.
My name is Jeff.
So he got my Shimoda for biffing it up in that scene.
Not specifically a Jaeger reference.
No. Biffing it in the like falling off the skateboard sense of the term.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure.
Yeah. How about yourself? Do you have a drunk Shimoda?
Duras and his valet have just discovered in the scene that Kalar has been doing some Google searches.
Right.
On Worf's genealogy. And they do the dumbest distract the security officer move that you could possibly get. They're like, what we need is a distraction. And so so Duras's bud goes out there and he's like, hey, look over there. And then they go walking out of frame, and then Duras just walks the other way. That security officer is like the dopiest. We have really bad security in this episode, and I think we've both made selections that underscore that feeling. He's just, like, your security officer looks like Jeff from Security. And mine looks like looks like Chad, you know?
Yeah, Jeff and Chad are not doing... Worf is not setting a great example for Jeff and Chad, let's just say.
Not at all. And I think if anyone needs to get pipped, it's probably Jeff and Chad after this one. It's not a punishment, you guys. We just want to have a few more meetings with you.
It's clear that we didn't train you sufficiently on how to use your dustbuster. And that's on us.
It's really our fault.
Yeah.
Damok and Jalad at Tanagra.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
Next episode is season 4, episode 8, Future Imperfect. After an away team mission fails, Riker awakens in sickbay to discover 16 years have passed and he now commands the Enterprise? Do you remember this episode, Adam?
It sounds like that works out pretty well for him. This, along with Remember Me, is one of my favorite shitty episodes. I love this episode.
I remember really liking this one, too. Yeah, I think that I was kind of vindicated on Remember Me, though.
Yeah, I still really like it, but I mean, you helped me see its many flaws.
Yeah. Well, this is cornball good, not cornball evil.
Okay.
Or chaotic cornball.
Chaotic cornball. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, we have to see it. We're all out of bullets, aren't we?
Yeah. Nothing left in the six shooter. Well, thanks to everybody for listening. If you enjoy the show and you want to donate to support its production, you can go to MaximumFun.org/donate. We really appreciate everybody that does that. And we had an idea recently for a special donors-only episode that may be happening soon. So if you want to get in on that, this is a good time to do that. Other ways you can support the show that don't cost money are leaving a nice review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you use. If you're in Overcast, click the recommend star. Put the word out about our show. Let's say you write for a big publication and you're casting about for that 10th podcast in your 10 podcasts you need to be listening to now article. Give us a shout. We'll give you a quote. Another way you can support the show is by copping one of them t-shirts.
Yeah, I think at this point we could probably announce that we have submitted our second t-shirt to the Max Funge store.
That is
true. And in the coming days, if not at this moment in time, that might be available for you.
Yeah. Go check that out. MaxFunStore.com for that. And we should thank Dark Materia and Adam Ragusea. Dark Materia, of course, makes the Picard song, which is our theme music. Adam Ragusea made our Priority One music, and we really appreciate all of that. Assuming they aren't already sold out, go buy tickets for our tour.
Yeah.
Go to MaximumFun.org and you can see all of our live dates and links to how to get to tickets. So thanks to everybody for listening. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a sadly imperfect episode of The Greatest Generation.
You could describe all of our episodes that way.
Yeah, I'd say that is sadly imperfect might be the main way of describing our podcast.
That is an evergreen review for our show, if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.